to Dragonfly Tales, a story podcast with me, Leo, and Emily.
Hello! And each episode will tell you a story from around the world and share some fun and silly things with you.
Welcome to Season 5!
Season 5!
Well, first things first, did we win a British Podcast Award?
Not this time.
Oh.
But there was an excellent party. I know you weren't allowed to come. Next time. And who knows, maybe next year we might do a bit better. So we want to say a really big thank you to everyone who supported us. This is just the beginning.
Yes, it is. Now, we've been a bit slow getting round to this new season, but we're off and we have loads coming.
We've got loads coming.
Including our Halloween special. Woo!
If you want a shout-out, a spooky shout-out, is that right, Leo? A spooky shout-out. For our Halloween special, please get your requests in now. It's a very, very popular show. And we have, for Halloween, a very special guest coming.
Ooh, very nice. Speaking of special guests, though, we have one for this episode.
What? We've got a special guest for our first episode?
Oh, yes. We were really lucky to have a chat with the master storyteller, Daniel Morden.
Oh, wow.
Remember him?
How could I forget? He's that amazing storyteller from Wales. Do you remember he did the story where he didn't tell us the answer? It was like a riddle story, do you remember?
Yes, that was one of the most amazing.
It really was, and all of the listeners had to go away and see if they could guess what the boy disguised himself as, what he turned himself into at the end of the story. So you've been speaking to Daniel Morden?
Yep, I had a chat with him about stories and about his new book, which has just come out in time for the spooky season.
What, you mean that you did an interview with Daniel Morden?
Well, I'd done an interview.
You'd done an interview?
Well, I did an interview. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
So, here's me with storyteller Daniel Morden. So, hey there, Daniel.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I'm enjoying the day, enjoying hanging out with my wife and son.
Oh, cool. How's the storytelling been going?
Oh, well, last night, Leo, I had a great one, which is near where I live. There's a dark skies reserve, so they don't allow any light at night. They don't have any street lights or anything because it's a national park. So I drove up there and some lovely, I don't know where they came from, really. A big old audience appeared, and I told them stories of the constellations that were visible that night in the sky.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It was glorious. So it's Perseus and Medusa,
yeah,
and Cassiopeia and Andromeda and the monster Cetus. Do you know that story?
Yes. It's a great one. Yeah. We've done it on the podcast, actually, I remember.
Yeah, I seem to remember that being the case. I seem to remember your mum mentioning that in passing.
Yeah.
So it's quite a good story at the moment because it's got Medusa in it, who's quite a hot issue at the moment, you know, telling stories, Greek mythology, from the female point of view.
So we've got a couple of questions for you about telling stories.
Yeah.
So the first one is, why is story so important to you?
Well, I think they're important to me because they help me come to terms with the experiences in my life. You know, sometimes something happens to you and you think you're the first person it ever happened to, like breaking your arm, for example. And then you run across a story where someone might not break their arm, but something else might happen that is very similar to what's happened to you. And you suddenly realize the emotions you're feeling, which can often be quite confusing, are actually not uncommon to the human race. And so as a result, I just feel like every time I tell a story, I feel a bit less alone. And my hope is the audience feel a bit less alone as well. So that's what I love about them.
Oh, that's very, very sweet. What are your favourite kinds of stories?
Well, they're the kind of stories that are in Strange Tales. Up till now, the publishers that have taken an interest in my work have either wanted me to write Greek myths or old stories from Wales. And this time, they let me tell whatever I wanted from wherever I liked. So this is this great damburst of stories that I've been telling for years and years and years, but haven't been able to put in a book. So I love stories that come back to where they began in a surprising way. I love that. I love that. And The Luck Child, for example, does that in this book. And also several other stories also go in a great kind of loop. What about you? What are your favourite kinds of stories?
Well, no, I'm a big fan of myths and legends, of course.
Me too.
As you said, I also love stories that come in a full circle.
I like symmetry. Like I say, some little idea early on in the story that gets planted by the story in your brain, and you think, oh, it's just a moment, it's just a little decoration. And then you realize later on it's actually really important to the rest of the story. And I love that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always used to like writing when I was a kid before I realized storytelling was a thing. And I think that's the writer in me admiring the cleverness of the structure.
What advice would you give to young tellers who are just starting to tell stories?
My advice is don't listen to advice. I think up to a certain point, that's good advice. I think, only in storytelling, not in like real life. Like wear a helmet when you're riding a bike. But what I mean is everyone who tells a story has to tell it in their own way.
Yeah.
I suppose a piece of advice I could offer is to say, only tell stories you really like. Because I don't know if you've ever had that experience of, like, say in school they give you a speech to read or a poem to read and you just can't make sense of it. Telling a story you don't like is a bit like telling a joke that you never found funny. It's just not going to work, is it? Nobody else is going to find it funny if you don't understand what the funny is. And likewise, with any other emotion, if it's a scary story, if it doesn't scare you, then it's not going to scare anyone else either. So find stories that you think, oh, that is wonderful. That is really clever and creepy and funny and weird, and only tell them.
That's very important. Now a bit of a funny one. What's the weirdest place you've ever told a story?
Well, I was I had a job back in the day in a park, and I had to walk around and offer anyone I met a story. Anyone who was walking around the park, I could offer them a story. So first thing I did was I had a coat made, painted with pictures of stories. So on one shoulder there was a king, and on the other shoulder there was a queen. And it had long tails. It was a tail coat, as you would expect from a storyteller. And on the tail coat, the flames of hell were like licking the bottom of the tails of the coat. And there was an angel painted across my back. And underneath it said, Daniel Morden, teller of myths, legends, riddles, jokes, ghost stories, fibs, stop me and hear one. So I'd walk around and I had to find a story for the blokes in the pub, in the park. And I had to find a story for the older people who were going to the greenhouses in the park, and I had to find a story for a bunch of brownies who were passing by, and it was Prince Charles there. King Charles came along. I had to tell him a story. I had to find stories for everyone I possibly met. And one time there was a bunch of comprehensive school kids with their teacher. And I said, hello, I'm a storyteller. Would you like a story? And the teacher went, yes, sit down, kids, sit down, kids. So all the kids sat down and I started telling a story. And from the corner of my eye, I could see the teacher running off. So I started my story and I saw her running back, and she stood in front of me and she had like a load of boxes from McDonald's, and she went like, she started handing them out to my audience. She stood between me and the kids and she was going, burger, 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 handing out all these burgers. And then finally, when she finished that, I kind of looked at her, glared at her like Paddington, and she ran off again. And I thought, right, here we go. I'll do it again. So I carried on with the story. And then I saw running back, and she came back with a whole basket full of bags of fries. And she was like, fries, 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 handing out the fries. And then she came back with shakes. So that was hard. That was pretty tough.
Well, that's a funny story to tell.
It wasn't a funny story to live, Leo, but never mind. Yes. They were quite a tough crowd anyway.
Yeah.
But then they got even tougher once they had a Big Mac. And they were unwrapping it, you know, and then they were chewing it while I was telling a story. And then they started on the fries, and then there was the inevitable slurping of the shakes.
Gosh, that must have been a hard crowd, as you said.
It was a tough one.
So, Daniel, let's talk about your brand new book, Strange Tales.
Woohoo!
Which has just come out a couple of days ago. I've read some of these stories, three of them, the first three. Well, tell me about this book, Daniel.
Well, it's an opportunity for me to share more. I mean, the great thing about books is they're a private company. They can go many, 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 many places. I can only go to one place at a time. Whereas a book can travel, you know, as many copies of the book can go to as many different places. So there's something wonderful about that. And I just feel like they're stories that deserve to be known more widely. There are some stories that everybody knows thanks to the Disney and the Pixar cartoons. But then there are loads of other stories that I just think are fascinating. And I've tried to jam as many of those stories into Strange Tales.
Which story did you have the most fun writing, if you could choose?
Gosh. Well, there's a seriously creepy one called The Other Eye. The idea, have you read that yet?
Emily has. She really enjoyed it.
The idea of it, you'll probably know this basic plot, but the idea is that there's a magic ointment, and if you smear it on your eyelid, you can see all the things that are usually invisible. And there are creatures moving amongst us that we don't know, we can't see. But if you put the ointment on, they are visible. And that is a really interesting idea to me. I think that's a really intriguing idea. So that story, I think, was probably the one I had the most fun with.
Yeah.
The idea of shifting from one world to another. It's a bit like telling a story in a way, because when you tell a story, you're in a room. And there's the people in front of you, but there's also this invisible world that everyone's imagining in their heads, which is the world of the story.
Do we want to see these creatures?
No, you really don't. No, they live in my head now. And perhaps you better skip that one. Yeah. I don't know. Halloween's coming up, and people like that stuff at Halloween, don't they?
Well, on this subject, what ages are suitable for this book, do you think?
Well, I would say probably 9-year-olds up and parents if they're feeling courageous. What would you say? How old are you?
Well, I'm 12 now.
12, right. What about the stories you've read so far? Were they easy to follow?
Well, I think your writing is very good at intriguing the older reader, but also making it able to be read by younger audiences as well. The story I read, Shudder, which I really enjoyed, it is quite creepy at points, but you kind of spin it in a way which makes it quite funny at the same time.
Thank you. That was my hope, yeah. And also, when you make, you know, they have this saying, which is never judge a book by its cover. And then when you're making a book, right, when you're making a book, you spend hours trying to invent a cover that people will judge the book by. And the cover of this book is very dark and creepy. So anyone who picks it up and starts reading Shudder or The Other Eye, and then says, oh, I didn't like this book because, like, there weren't fluffy bunnies running through the sunshine, making daisy chains and dancing happily with their friends, then, you know, I've got an answer to that, which is just have a look on the cover. And, you know, it does what it says on the tin. The stories are strange and some of them are really quite scary. So if you don't like that sort of thing, pick up another book.
If you have the book to hand, would you like to read a passage for us?
Well, I'm just going to tell you a bit, actually, Leo. Here we go. So, once upon a time, a baby was born by the sea, in a hut made of the broken bits of boats. The baby's mother and father had no money, but near where they lived, there was a village, and there was an old woman skilled in delivering children, bringing babies into the world safely. So she delivered the child, and then she saw on the child's forehead there was a mark, a birthmark, a red mark. And she said, I know by this mark that one day your son will marry a princess. This is a luck child. Well, the old woman, she made her way to the nearest village where she lived, and she told the people in the village the exciting story of what she had seen and done. And the people in the village liked the story, so when they went to their town, they told the people in the town. The people in the town, some of them had to go to the city on market day, and they took the story to the city, and they told the people in the city, and so it was, the rumor reached the king, who lived on the hill, in the castle, in the city, and he heard that his beautiful daughter, who'd just been born, who was wriggling in a golden cradle, was gonna marry a boy who'd been born in a hut made of the broken bits of boats. And when the king heard that, he resolved that he would not allow that to happen. So that night, he dressed himself in a disguise, crept out the castle when no one was looking down a secret passage, and he made his way along the coast of his country till he found a hut made of the broken bits of boats. He went to the door in his disguise. He knocked. The door was opened by the baby's father. There stood a stranger. He said, excuse me, I was passing by, I heard a baby crying. Girl or a boy? We have a boy, said the baby's father. The stranger, he shed a tear, and he said, I have no children. You have one son. And as I passed by, I was thinking, what hope has the little one here with nothing, being born in a hut made of the broken bits of boats? Listen to me now. I am rich. If you love your son, you'll give him to me. I would buy him every privilege. And who knows, with the things I could buy him, he may even marry a princess. The baby's father turned and looked at the baby's mother, and they both looked at the stranger at the door, and they said, it is fate that you've come to the house this day. We are meant to give our child to you, and then you are how he will marry the princess. And so they took their newborn baby and they gave him to the stranger and they said, you will take care of him. And the stranger smiled and said, don't you worry, I'll take care of him. And the king jumped on his horse, rode to the nearest river and threw that baby in. Straight away it was swept downstream. Now, Leo, I don't know if you've read this one yet, but if you have, set aside what you know. Is that going to be the end of this story?
I really hope not.
I mean, what kind of a story is going to end like that?
Well,
It started with once upon a time, so Leo, how's it going to end?
It has to end with a happily ever after.
Exactly. Exactly. So if the baby drowns in the river, they all don't live happily ever after.
No.
And you know your Greek myths, I'm sure. Yeah. So you know that if ever there's a prophecy, someone tries to cheat the prophecy, and it always goes wrong. So that's not much of a spoiler, but that's where I'm going to leave it.
Oh, round of applause.
Thank you.
What an amazing cliffhanger. I love the sound of that. I'm definitely going to read that one.
Thank you.
This book sounds incredible and is incredible from the stories I've read. And, well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Not at all. It's my pleasure. Yeah. And, well, thank you very much for spreading the word about the book. I'm very proud of it. And I'm grateful that you've given it this little platform and an opportunity for other people to find out about it and maybe get it for Christmas.
Well, thank you so much for coming here, and thank you for being here.
You're welcome. You're welcome. My best wishes to you all.
Oh, that was brilliant, Leo. So good. Have you read many of the stories in his book?
Well, there was a specific one that I was talking to him about after that I really enjoyed. About two sisters that got turned into animals by this dark magician. And I asked him a question at the end, after the interview. There's this part in the story where him and a good witch are doing a kind of contest of magic, which is really, really cool.
Wow.
And he creates this kind of tree for his turn, and it looks beautiful, extravagant, and then he leaves the room to give the witch her turn, and an apple slowly grows off the tree.
Oh, this apple's going to be significant, isn't it?
Yeah, and then the witch plucks it off the tree, walks into the room that the wizard was in, and...
spoiler alert!
She's pulled his head off.
Oh my goodness. He did say that the stories are quite spooky and creepy, aren't they?
Yeah.
I particularly like the story The Other Eye, which reminds me of an old folk tale about the fairy midwife. And it's all about what you can see and what you can't see. It's absolutely brilliant. So, that was amazing. Well done for interviewing. Wonderful skills, Leo. It's a really fantastic book. It's called Strange Tales, and we encourage our readers to go out and buy it. And I've put a link in our show notes so that you can get it wherever you are in the world.
We really enjoyed it, and make sure you can enjoy it too. Well, I think it's time for some shout-outs.
Oh, shout-outs. Now, before we begin our shout-outs, I just want to say to the listeners, we are being inundated with shout-outs. There's lots and lots coming in, and we're going to do our best to get to all of you. The best way to do it, remember, is to put it in the story chat. If you don't hear your name this episode, don't worry. We will get to you. And if your grown-ups want to give us a little nudge, they can do that too. But we'll do our best to try and make sure everyone gets a shout-out. Who have we got this episode, Leo?
Well, firstly, here's a shout-out to Ogden, Dermot and Gemma in Pennsylvania, USA.
Oh, hi, folks!
Hi, folks!
Thanks for listening!
Next, we have a shout-out to Callum and his cat Ziggy in Durham.
Hi, Callum!
Hi, Callum!
Meow,
hi,
meow, Ziggy!
Meow, meow!
Thanks for listening!
Here is a shout-out to Arush Liza, who is 6, and Mirelle Ava, who is 4, from Edinburgh.
Oh, hello there in Edinburgh! Hi, Arush!
Hi, Arush! Hi, Mirelle!
Thanks for listening!
Next, here's a shout-out for Clara in Chelmsford.
Hi, Clara!
Hi, Clara!
Thanks for listening!
Here's a birthday shout-out to Layla, who just turned 10, and her sister, Macy, who is 7.
Hi, Layla!
Hi, Layla!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Hi, Macy! Thanks for listening!
Now we have a shout-out to Margot, who is age 6, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, USA. She loves all the stories, particularly trickster stories.
We love the trickster ones. Hi,
Margot! Hi,
Margot! Thanks for listening!
Another birthday shout-out to Callie in Canterbury, and she has just turned 6. She loves the unicorn tale.
Oh, so do I. Hi, Callie! Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Thanks for listening! to Australia now, and a shout out for Radomir, who is age 8, Quilla, who is age 6, and Aura, who is age 3.
G'day, folks!
G'day, folks!
Hi there!
Thanks for listening!
And who have we got finally, Leo?
Well, finally, we have Zachariah, who is 7, and Aurelia, who is 4, in Marden, Kent. They love the stories, and Aurelia had just started school as well.
Oh, good luck, Aurelia. Hi, folks.
Hi, folks.
Hi, Zachariah. Thanks for listening. Oh, that was brilliant. And remember, if you would like a shout-out on our podcast, let us know in the Dragonfly Tales Facebook group. There's a special shout-out chat that you can contact us in, or you can email us, emilydragonflytales@gmail.com.
Tell us your age and your town, please.
And I'll put the details in the episode notes, and hopefully we will get to your shout-out soon.
So, Emily, what's your story today?
Well, Leo, for my story, we return to that special place, the Greenwood. Do you remember when we were last there?
Oh, yeah, that was in Season 3, Episode 11, when we met Robin Hood.
Robin Hood, one of the most famous outlaws ever. He lives with his merry men in the Greenwood, robs from the greedy rich and gives it to the needy poor. And his arch enemy is...
the Sheriff of Nottingham.
The evil Sheriff of Nottingham. And do you remember any of the merry men in his troupe, his band?
Oh, of course. Well, we have Little John and
Little
Will Scarlet.
John. Will Scarlet. There's also other characters like Midge the Miller's son and Friar Tuck. But the story we're going to tell today actually comes before the last one. It's how he met his BFF. Do you know what that stands for?
Best Friend Forever.
That's right. It's how he met Little John. How do you think we should start this story?
I think we should start with our pledge of honour to join Robin's band of merry men. Do you remember it, listeners?
Stand with me under the greenwood tree and pledge, breath of the wood, honour, friendship, liberty.
Gather around all ye lasses and lads, be a peddler or a yeoman or king. Come stand under hazelwood, elder and oak, for 'tis of the greenwood I sing. You'll find laughter aplenty, food for your belly, and the ale flows all day as it should. Come join us in merriment and liberty in the warmth of the gentle greenwood. The king rules the forest and chokes us with law, with its taxes and penalties too. But the greenwood, the bright wood, can never be old, for the greenwood, my friends, it owns you. So take comfort and shelter beneath these great trees, and I'll tell you of brave Robin Hood. For you are now a merry one, valiant and good, a child of the evergreen wood. The summer was ending in the greenwood. The air was filled with the smell of ripe apples and earthy mushrooms. The leaves were turning to gold and crimson. Some had begun to take flight, swirling in the breeze and floating downward. Many landed in a stream that ran through the greenwood, whisked away like little boats. And on the bank of the stream sat Robin Hood. His chin resting on his hand, he watched the leaves rush away down the stream, and he sighed.
What's up with him?
Well, why don't you ask him?
Hey, Robin, what's the matter?
Well, being an outlaw isn't exactly fun. 3 months I've been hiding in the wood.
Well, why were you outlawed in the first place?
Well, that would be telling. Let's just say I don't like the way Prince John treats his people. Taxing them, starving them, and claiming that hunting for deer in the forest is only for him and his men. The Greenwood belongs to no one. We belong to it.
So why are you so moody?
I'm not moody. I'm exhausted. Many poor peasants have come to hide in the arms of the Greenwood. They've been beaten, starved, houses burned down by that brute of a sheriff and his soldiers. They're terrified.
That's horrible. Why is the sheriff doing that?
Taxes. Prince John is greedy, so he charges the peasants money to live on his land. More money than they can afford. He sends the sheriff out to collect it.
What a couple of horrible bullies.
The people come here, to me, where they can be safe. They come for my help and learn how to defend themselves against the sheriff and his brute squad.
Surely that's good. You have an army against evil, you merry band of men.
Not so merry yet. Don't you get it?
Clearly not.
Well, maybe I can help, Leo. You see, Robin grew up a nobleman. His father had a large house with huge woods, so as a boy he played in the woods, learning many things from the foresters who lived there. He learned woodcraft and carving, how to make and string a bow. Have you ever done any woodcrafting, Leo?
Yeah, a little bit. It's quite fun.
At forest school and things like that?
Yeah.
I think we're trying to get those skills back. Robin learned which berries and mushrooms were good for eating and which were deadly poison. He learned the different song of woodland birds, the blackcap, the nightingale, the tawny owl. And he learned how to recognise the pad of the red fox, the sound of deer hooves. By the time he was a young man, Robin could move through the undergrowth without making a sound.
Whoa, that's incredible.
But the poor peasants were not used to living in the forest. They were more used to fields and farms.
Oh, I get it. They don't have any experience like Robin does.
Exactly.
Robin can't teach them all by himself, either.
And that's why I'm exhausted.
Yeah, you could do with some help.
Robin picked himself up and began to walk along the bank of the stream, breathing in the different scents, earthy and mossy, fresh pine, decaying leaves. And soon he felt much better, revived by the trees. As he walked a bend in the stream, he saw a sort of bridge up ahead. It wasn't a proper bridge. A tree had fallen over the stream and made a sort of crossing point. As Robin approached the tree bridge and began to cross, he heard a rustling noise coming from the bushes on the other side. Now, if you were Robin Hood, Leo, you would have to assess this rustling very quickly. Remember his skills. What do you think?
Too noisy for a bird and too large for a deer. A predator would be more careful too. And the smell, it seems all too human.
All this Robin noticed in less than a second.
A nanosecond?
Yeah, well done, Leo. And then the bushes parted and out stepped a man. A very, very big man. A very, very tall man, much taller and bigger than Robin Hood. What do you think he looks like, Leo?
Well, I think his stature was like a giant tree.
Whoa.
Thighs like tree trunks.
Whoa.
Arms like branches spouting off of them. Fists that could destroy boulders and stones. And even birds could nest in his big, bushy beard.
He seems fantastic. And does he have any weapons?
Well, I think in his hand he holds a quarterstaff.
A quarterstaff. So that's a very, very strong, stout bit of wood that's probably quite tall. He's got a quarterstaff. The stranger placed one huge foot on the tree bridge and it groaned. Robin wobbled a little. I say there, big fellow, be a good chap and step off so I can cross. There's only room for one man at a time. The hulking figure scowled at Robin and stamped on the bridge. And that man is me. You best back up, pipsqueak. You hairy oaf, I was on the bridge first. Stand aside, or I shall be forced to teach you a lesson. The stranger boomed with laughter, so loud that birds flew from the trees. You? With what? And he spun his quarterstaff around his body.
Oh, it's kicking off. I feel a fight coming on.
Robin took an arrow from his quiver, knocked it against his bow, and pointed it at the laughing giant, who stopped laughing. With this, you bearded bull calf, now retreat.
Nice one, Robin, but that's not very fair, is it?
I don't think so. And neither did the stranger. So you are a coward. A spineless little child. You see I have no bow, only my staff. If you want passage across this bridge, you must fight me for it. But on equal terms.
I think that's fair enough, actually.
So did Robin. He lowered his bow, walked back across the bridge, and using his hunting blade, he cut and stripped himself a thick sapling and returned to face the huge man on the bridge. I shall enjoy cracking your skull, you cheeky pup. And with that, both men began to swing their staffs at each other. Robin jumped over the stranger's staff as he swung.
Whoa!
Ha! You'll have to be quicker than that to catch me. And then he thrust his own toward the man's stomach. But the huge fellow was quicker than he looked and turned sideways, dodging the tip of Robin's staff.
Nice one, Mr. Giant.
Both men began to wobble on the bridge, Leo. Are we going to call him? Whoa! Right. Time for you to have a cold bath, you brat. The giant swung and Robin ducked as the staff swiped the air above his head. Robin lunged with his and this time struck the man in his stomach hard.
Nice one, Robin.
Ugh. The huge man groaned and bent over. Robin laughed triumphantly and went to smack him on his backside. What a naughty boy you are. Take that.
That was a mistake.
It was. The bearded man made a swipe at Robin's staff, knocked it flying into the air, and it plummeted with a splash into the stream. In you go after it, boy! And then he whacked Robin hard on the back, sending him toppling into the water with a huge splash! When Robin came gurgling to the surface, he was fuming. He was furious. He was raging. He looked all around for his staff, only to see that it was already floating far downstream. Oh, dear, my little wet fish. It seems I've taught you the lesson. Robin looked up at the huge fellow laughing on the bridge, hands on his hips, quarterstaff resting on his shoulders. And Robin Hood began to laugh too.
Hey, he's Robin Hood. Of course he's not going to be a sore loser.
Well, it seems that you've done more than teach me a lesson in fighting.
A swimming lesson too.
The bridge is yours, friend. You have bested me. Let it never be said that Robin Hood is a bad loser. Robin Hood? You are he of the Greenwood? I am, sir. You have the advantage. Will you help me out of this water? The stranger ran to the bank, extended his arm to Robin and pulled him out. Robin squelched over to the grass, sat down and emptied the water out of his boots. So, you're Robin Hood, the lad that keeps that wicked sheriff on his toes. You're the very man I came to find this day. I wish to join you. Robin smiled.
He could use a good fighter like this.
You wish to join me? And live as an outlaw here in the Greenwood? I do, Robin. For the good of the innocent. I'll serve you loyally until England is free from the tyranny of Prince John and the Sheriff, or until my death, which hopefully is a long way off. Come then, said Robin, and you shall be my right hand. Back to camp we will go. I've meat and I've ale, a plenty for you, my big fellow, and lots of training work. As the two odd figures strolled back through the trees, the squirrels and magpies stopped their foraging. The deer lifted their heads, only for a moment, just to find out.
Find out what?
Tell me, O man mountain, what is your name? Why, John Little.
John Little? More like Little John.
Say then with me, Little John, this pledge.
Breath of the wood. Honour, friendship, liberty.
The two friends shook hands and disappeared together into a swirl of fluttering autumn leaves.
The end.
So, Leo, did you like that story?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant.
What was your favourite bit?
Well, I liked how, after losing, Robin was still a fair man and laughed at the joke. And
he did, yeah. He's a good sport. And I think that's what we like about Robin Hood, is that anything he does that can be considered a bit bad is towards baddies.
Yeah.
But yes, he was bested by Little John and they went on to become very, very close friends, as we know.
So that's it for this episode. Thanks to the brilliant Daniel Morden for talking to us, sharing his wisdom, and make sure you get his book.
And if you are enjoying our podcast, please, please share the podcast with your friends, with your family. Spread the word about Dragonfly Tales.
Or you can leave us a review saying how much you love us.
Give us those 5 stars, please. And if you can, make a little donation on the website to keep us going. And
thank you so much.
You have been listening to Dragonfly Tales with Emily and Leo.
We hope you enjoyed our podcast and we'll be back with another story soon. But until then, a true friend is like a 4-leaf clover.
Hard to find and lucky to have.
Bye. Our podcast is brought to you by Emily, Leo and Andy at Dragonfly Tales. Join our Dragonfly Tales podcast group on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Dragonfly Tales Pod, and follow us on Twitter at Emily Dragonfly.
Oh, spooky season!